To glance at Clun Namarov as you come by the hilly road is to get the impression of a very old burial ground. To pause on the road and look at Clun Namarov is to become conscious of its quiet situation, of winds singing down from the hills in a chant for the dead. To get over the stile and stumble about inside is to forget all these things and to know Clun Namarov for itself. The ground is billowy, grotesque. A long, tough growth of grass wires it from end to end. No path here. No plan, nor map, or register exists. All claims to interment are based on powerful traditional rights. For to prove a right to a place in its community is to have the bond of your pedigree sealed. The act of burial in Clun Namarov is in itself an epitaph. And it's amazing to think that there are one or two people still over the sod who have such a right. Like Mortimer Hare, the weaver, who has just passed away. And they have come to Clun Namarov to search for his grave. First over the stile is
Michal Linsky, the nail maker. His long, white body moves in a shuffle over the ground.
Following him over the stile came
Cahir Bowes, the stonebreaker, so beaten down from the hips forward that his back is horizontal, like the back of an animal.
Both old men have the air of those who had been unexpectedly let loose. For a long time they had lurked somewhere in the shadows of life, the world having no business for them. And now, suddenly, they have been remembered and called forth to perform an office which nobody else on earth could perform. Hot on their heels came the twin gravediggers.
Two dark, handsome, stoutly built men, alike even to the card that tied their corduroy trousers under the knees, and carrying flashing spades.
Last of all, and after a little delay, a firm, white hand is laid on the stile. A dark figure followed. The figure of a woman
whose pale, sad face is framed in a black shawl. The widow of Mortimer Hare, the weaver, following the others into Clun Namarov, the meadow of the dead.
Michal Linsky, the nailer, hitched forward his bony shoulders and cast his eyes over the ground.
Eyes that were small and sharp, not accustomed to range over wide spaces. He had spent his life on the lookout for one small object so that he might hit it. The colour that he loved was the golden glowing end of a stick of burning iron. Whenever he saw that, he seized it in a small sconce at the end of a long handle, wrenched it off by a twitch of the wrist, hit it with a flat hammer several taps, dropped it into a vessel of water, out of which it came a cool and perfect nail.
Accustomed as he was to concentrate on a single, glowing, definite object, the width and disorder of Clun Namarov unnerved him. But he wasn't going to betray any of these professional defects to
Cahir Bowes, the stonebreaker. He had been sent there as an ambassador by the caretaker of Clun Namarov, picked out for his great age, his local knowledge and good character. And it was his business to point out to the twin gravediggers, sons of the caretaker, the weaver's grave, so that it might be open to receive him.
Michal Linsky had a knowledge of the place.
I am certain, sure, of a great number of grave sites. While the caretaker, being an official without records, has only a profound ignorance of the whole place.
Cahir Bowes had his knowledge of the place?
Some of my own people are buried here, and as between me and Michal Linsky, there can be no two opinions. My knowledge is superior to the knowledge of the nailer.
So he follows the drifting figure of Michal Linsky, his face hitched up between his shoulders, his eyes keen and grey, glint-like as the mountains of stones he had in his day broken up as road material. Whenever he passes a headstone, he taps it significantly with a ferrule of his stick. In stones he sees not sermons, but seams. He had the artist's passion for his art, though his art was far from creative. He was one of the great destroyers, a breaker, a maker of chaos, a powerful and remorseless critic of the Stone Age. The two old men wander about Clunamarov, in no hurry whatever to get on with their business. After all, they've been a long time pensioned off, forgotten, neglected by the world, and they knew that when this business was over, they were not likely to be in request for anything in this world again. So the two ancients wander about with the labor of age and the hearts of children, stumbling on forgotten things, gathering up the threads of days that were over, reviving old memories, beginning to talk slowly, almost casually. And the talk was of the dead, of the people who lay in the ground about them, reviving old virtues, whispering at past vices, vices that didn't sound like vices at all, for the long years are great mitigators, so that they were no longer scandals, but romances, in a world which was made up of the twin gravediggers and the widow of the weaver. The gravediggers
rested their spades on the ground, leaning on the handles in a graveyard pose.
And the pale widow
stood silent, apart, patient, and like all dark, tragic-looking women, a little mysterious.
Where are we to bury the weaver?
The two old men swing slowly around to see where the interruption, the impertinence, had come from. They looked from one twin to another with gravity, with anxiety, for they're not at all sure which is which, or if there was not some illusion in the resemblance, some trick of youth to baffle age. They were trying to fix in their minds which of the twins had interrupted first.
We can't stay here forever.
The eyes of Michal Linsky fixed on one twin with the instinct of his trade. He fastens his small eyes on him. He was sure of his man this time.
There's many a better man than you that will stay here forever.
Them that stays in Clunamarov have nothing to be ashamed of. Remember that young fellow.
Well, where are we to bury him anyway?
You'll bury him where all belonging to him is buried.
We came with some intention of that kind.
You'll bury him...
Where are you told to bury him?
Do you hear that old Abaddon Keher boast?
Michal Linsky was hurt, and he determined to do a dreadful thing. A thing that was worse than kicking a crutch from under a cripple's shoulder. He determined to ruin the last day's amusement on earth for Keher boast by prematurely and basely disclosing the weaver's grave. Moving down the graveyard, he stopped suddenly.
Here is the weaver's grave, and here you will bury him, between these two mounds. Between these two mounds is the grave of Mortimer Heher, the weaver.
Hold on. Easy there. What is it you're saying about the spot between these two mounds?
I'm saying that it's the weaver's grave.
What weaver?
Mortimer Heher. There's no other weaver in it.
Was Julia Rafferty a weaver?
What Julia Rafferty?
The midwife, God rest her.
How could she be a weaver if she was a midwife?
Not one of me knows. But I'll tell you what I do know, and know rightly, that it's Julia Rafferty is in that place, and no weaver at all.
Amn't I telling you it's the weaver's grave?
Amn't I telling you it's not?
That I may be as dead as my father, but the weaver was buried there.
A bone of a weaver was never sunk in it as long as weavers was weavers. Full of Rafferty's it is.
Alive with weavers it is.
Heavenly Father, was the like ever heard, to say that a grave was alive with dead weavers.
It's full of them, full as a tick.
The clean grave that Mortimer Heher was never done boasting about. Dry and sweet and deep and no way bulging at all. Did you see the burial of his father?
I didn't see the burial of his father 40 years ago, if it's a day.
40 years ago. It's 51 years come the 16th of May. It's well I remember it. And it's well I have occasion to remember it. For it was the day after that again that myself ran away to join the soldiers. My aunt had foot after me. She to be buying me out the week after. I, a high-spirited fellow, would be choking.
Leave the soldiers out of it, and leave your aunt out of it, and stick to the weaver's grave. Here, in this place, was the last weaver buried. And I'll tell you what's more. In a straight line with it is the grave
of... A straight line, indeed. Who but yourself, Michal Linsky, ever heard tell of a straight line in Clunamarov? No such thing was ever wanted or ever allowed in it.
In a straight, direct line, measured with a rule while...
Measured with crooked, stumbling feet. Maybe feet half reeling in drink.
Can't you listen to me?
I was always a bad one to listen to anything except sense. Yourself ought to be the last man in the world to talk about straight lines. You with the sights scattered in your head, with the divilest sparks flying under your eyes.
Don't mind my sparks now, nor my sight neither. For in a straight measured line with the weaver's grave was the grave of the Cassidys.
What Cassidys?
The Cassidys that held it for the O'Shea's.
Which O'Shea?
O'Shea Rua Kappa Kelly. Don't you know anyone at all? Is it gone entirely your memory is?
Kappa Kelly, now. And who cares a whistle about O'Shea Rua? He or his seed, breed, and generation. It's a rotten lot of land grabbers they were.
My hand to you on that. Striving ever to get their red paws on this bit of grass or that perch of meadow.
Hungry in themselves, even for the cutaway bob.
And Mortimer Herr, a decent weaver, respecting every man's wool.
His forehead pallid with honesty, over the yarn and the loom.
It's a bit broad-spoken when he came to the door for a smoke of his pipe.
Well, there won't be a mouthful of clay between himself and O'Shea Rua now. In the end, what did O'Shea Rua get after all his strife?
I'll tell you that. He got what land suits a blowing fiddler.
Enough to pad the crown of the head and tap the sole of the foot. Now you're talking.
And the divil a word out of him now. No more than anyone else in Clune tomorrow.
It's easy to us to be talking all about land when we're packed up in our timber boxes.
As the weaver was when he got sprinkled with holy water in that very place.
As Julia Rafferty was when they read the prayers over her in that place. She a fine, buxom, cheerful woman in her day with great skill in her business.
Skill or no skill, I'm telling you she's not there, wherever she is.
I suppose you want me to take her up in my arms and show her to you?
Well, then indeed, Cahir, I do not. Tisn't a very handsome pair you would make at all, and you're not able to stand much more hardship than Julia herself.
After this first little dispute, they move from grave to grave, pitting memory against memory, story against story, knocking down reminiscence with reminiscence, arguing in a powerful, intimate obscurity that no outsider can hope to follow, blasting knowledge with knowledge until the whole place seems strewn with corpses. The two gravediggers
followed them about in a grim silence.
The widow keeping track of the grand tour with a miserable feeling, a feeling, as sight after sight is rejected, that the tremendous exclusiveness of Clun Amarv would altogether push the dead man, the weaver, out of his privilege.
The dispute ends, like all epics, where it began. Nothing was established, nothing settled. But the two old men were quite exhausted. The twin gravediggers
grew restive. The business has to be done. The weaver will have to be buried. Mihalinsky is right.
Don't put a spade in that place or I'll brain you.
Touch me with that stick and I'll have you...
Don't touch the poor old cranky fella. You might hurt him.
He has annoyed me greatly, but for your sake I won't touch him. Since you ask me so nicely, I won't even threaten him.
It's the weaver's grave, surely.
If it is, remember his father was buried down 7 feet. You gave in to that this morning?
There is no giving in about it. We all know that one of the wonders of Clun Amarv was the burial of the last weaver 7 feet, he having left it as an injunction on his family. The world knows that.
And remember this, that Julia Rafferty was buried no 7 feet. If she's down 3 feet, it's as much as she went.
Sure enough, the gravediggers had not dug down more than 3 feet of ground when one of the spades struck hollowly on unhealthy timber. There was silence for a moment.
Now is it the weaver's grave? Well, you know it's not. It's Julia Rafferty you struck. She helped many a one into the world in her day, and it's poor recompense to her to say she can't be at rest when she left it. Well, you may rub your ignorant legs, Mihalinsky. And I'm hoping Julia will forgive you this day's ugly work.
I suppose you know, Caherbos, where the weaver's grave is.
You suppose?
I'm not at all sure I suppose right.
Well, then, I do know where the weaver's grave is.
We'll be very much obliged to you if you show it to us. Very much obliged.
Carbose goes east, making little journeys here and there, measuring so many steps from one place to another, mumbling strange, unintelligible information to himself, striking the ground with hard taps of his stick, moving all the time like a grotesque spider weaving an invisible web.
Glory be to God, he's like the man they had driving for water from the well in the quarry field. He's whacking the ground with his magic hazel wand. I suppose now that as soon as Tahar hits the right spot, one of the weavers will turn round below. Or maybe he expects one of them to whistle up at him out of the ground. Hey, that's it, Divlother. When we hear the whistle, we'll know for certain where to bury the weaver. Oh, say nothing, he'll get it yet. Will the man of knowledge, the know-all Tahar Bose. Oh, give him time. Give him until this day, 12 months. Look. But that for a right about turn on the left heel. Isn't the nimbleness of that young fella a treat to see? Are they whistling to you from below, Cahill? Is it dancing to the weaver's music you are?
I'll call your bluff right now, me old fella. Here on this very spot is the weaver's grave.
What? God in heaven, will you look at what he calls the weaver's grave? I'll say nothing at all. I'll hold me tongue. I'll shut up. Not one word will I say about Alec Finlay. The mildest man that ever lived, a man full of religion, never at the end of his prayers. But sure, it's the saints of God that get the worst of it in this world. And if Alec escaped during life, faith, he's in for it now, with the pirates and the body snatchers of Clunamar down on top of him.
Grave digger, to your digging, I don't mind that foolish old man at all.
Oh, to be sure, I'm to sing you. I'm not to have a word out of me at all. Others can rattle away as they like in this place as if they owned it. The ancient good old stock is to be nowhere, and the scruff of the hills let rampage as they will. That's it, dim lodder, castles falling and dunghills rising. Well, God be with the good old times and the good old mannerly people that used to be in it. And God be with Alec Finlay, the holy...
Will you wish, sir, you'll put the exact location astray on me?
Remember now, you said it yourself. You said it yourself. The last weaver is down 7 feet. And remember, too, that Alec Finlay, whose grave you are rooting at, is down less than Julia Rafferty, that went down only 5 feet.
Suddenly, out of the soft earth, a spade sounds harsh on tinware. There's a crash, not harsh, but painfully distinct, as if rotten boards were falling apart. Then a distinct subsidence of the earth. Then a moment's fearful silence.
God be merciful to us all. That's the latter end of Alec Finlay.
It can't be the weaver's grave.
It can't be the weaver's grave.
It's the grave of Alec Finlay. If I was guilty of digging him up to find out, I'd go down on my knees and beg God's pardon. If I didn't, I'd know the ghost of Alec Finlay, saint that he was, would leap upon me and guzzle me. For what right would I have to set anybody at him with driving spades when he was long years in his grave? But you won't go down on your knees in repentance. You won't indeed.
Indeed I will not.
Carbose, I'll tell you what you are, and then you can tell me what I am.
But whatever way you like, what is it that I am?
You're a gentleman, a grand old stone-breaking gentleman. That's what you are.
And do you know what you are?
I do not.
You're a nailer. That's what you are. A damned nailer.
Deadlock. Complete and absolute deadlock. The proceedings in Clunamarov had become painful, even tragical, to the widow. But her only emotion was...
a sincere desire to see the weaver buried in the grave to which the respectability of his family entitled him to. The weavers had always been great authorities on this ancient burial place. Mortimer had been the greatest of all authorities. 50 years ago, the grave had last been opened to receive the remains of Mortimer's father. 30 years previous to that, it had been opened to take in his father's father. Mortimer's three first wives were not buried here at all. He seldom spoke of them. He seldom spoke of Anthony. He knew the grave, but it never even occurred to him that nobody else knew of its whereabouts. Now he had passed away like some learned astronomer who discovered a new star, but forgot to mark its place upon the chart. And here were Michal Linsky and Cahir Vose, two other seasoned astronomers looking for the new star, which the weaver in his love for it had lost among the windy acres of the skies. Mortimer believed that when his time came he'd get a royal funeral, fitting to the last of the line of Clún na Mara weavers. Instead of that, they have no more idea of where to bury him than if he'd been a wild tinker of the roads. But they'd all forgotten the oldest man of them all, Malachy Ruhan, a great friend of Mortimer's in the days that were over. Malachy Ruhan, the cooper, who was that long bedridden that those who remembered him at all thought of him as a man who died a long time ago. There's nothing else for it but to go up to the tunnel road and ask Malachy where it is the grave is.
There was nothing else for it. The two ancients who were stretched exhausted on the tombstones said nothing. Not even they could raise a voice against the possibilities of Malachy Ruhan, the cooper. By the terrible, aged silence, they gave consent. And the widow turned to walk out of Clún na Mara. One of the gravediggers took out his pipe. The eyes of the other
followed the widow and then walked after her.
She became conscious of a man's step behind and turned her palely sad face upon him.
Ask Malachy Ruhan where the grave is, the exact place.
It was to do this the widow was leaving Clún na Mara. She had just announced that she was going to ask Malachy Ruhan where the grave was. Maybe he's coming to the stile just to show a little sympathy. Men are very curious in their ways sometimes. It all sounded like very mannerly advice.
The exact place, now remember. Ask that.
I will. I'll put that question to Malachy Ruhan.
And then she passed over the stile and through the faded streets in her quiet gait, moderately grief-stricken at the death of the weaver. After all, she was...
his fourth wife. And it would be out of place to give way to the ordinary sort of grief that would be expected of a first or second widow. No need to be drawing attention to the fact. There was enough of that kind of talk at the wake the night before. People listen to, remember, and believe what they hear at wakes. It's more precious to them than anything they hear in school or chapel. The old woman with a memory, speaking to the company from a chair beside a laid-out corpse, carries more authority than a bishop allocuting from his throne. Great talk last night of the weaver story. But I didn't come into that story like other women, for my beauty or my money, but simply because I was a fourth wife, a kind of curiosity, the backwash of Mortimer Hare's romances. Still, no complaints about Mortimer, even though he came with no fiery love. Right enough, he dyed his hair. But that was to be expected in a man who always married a new wife as soon as possible after burying the previous one.
These thoughts, in some shape or other, occupied, without agitating, the mind of the widow, until she reached the door of Malachy Ruhan's house. His daughter showed little interest as the widow disclosed her business.
I wouldn't put it to pass me father, Mr. Seher, to have knowledge of the grave. The Lord have mercy on the weaver. Come into the room, anyhow.
The room, small, low, and stuffy. A smell of age, of decay. God has made me to move ever in the ways of old men, cantankerous, contrary old men. Old men for whom you're always doing something, always remembering something, from missen buttons to last graves. But if the weaver is buried in the wrong grave, his soul would never rest, a soul wandering in the howling winds of the earth. He'd grieve even in heaven for his grave, as bitterly as a saint might grieve who'd lost his halo.
Someone to see your father. Wait now till I hand you your rope, father.
Old men. A ghost of an old man hoisting himself up from the dead by the length of a rope, reversing the usual procedure. Holding on to life by that length of rope. A firm grip to the last.
Wait now, father, till I prop up the pillars.
Men?
Yes, father.
Who's this one?
Mrs. Heher.
Mrs. Heher? What Heher would she be?
The weaver's wife.
The weaver? Is it Mortimer Heher?
Yes, father. Don't you know her?
Trot, I know her. She's Delia Morrissey that married the weaver. Delia Morrissey that he followed into Munster, a raven lunatic with a dint of love.
The weaver's first wife, he thinks I am. God, it's terrible, terrible to think that I was ever a wife to a man the one age with this old man who holds on to life with a rope.
Isn't it Delia Morrissey herself we have in it?
Leave it so, Nan.
Yes, Delia Morrissey.
Well, what are you talking about? Delia Morrissey died. She was one day eating a dinner and a bone stuck in her throat. The weaver clapped her in the back, which was no good. She choked to death before his eyes on the floor. I remember that. And the weaver himself near died of grief after. But he married secondly. Who is this he married secondly, Nan?
I don't know.
Who did he marry the second time? Sally McCabe.
Sally McCabe, father.
So you're Sally McCabe from Lowscarn. The one Mortimer took off with the blacksmith. Well, that was the business, surely. The pair of them hot tempered men and your own beauty gone to their heads like strong drink. I never thought I'd clap eyes again on Sally.
Oh, no, father. You're wrong, father.
Leave it so, Nan. Leave it so.
And what way is Mortimer keeping?
He's dead, father.
Dead? Mortimer dead, huh? What in the name of God happened to him?
A weakness came over him. A sudden weakness.
Oh, to think of a man being whipped off all of a sudden like that. Oh, and that's the way with Martin O'Hare. What one of us can be sure at all? None of us are sure. Oh, to think of the weaver with his heart as strong as a bull going off in a little weakness. That's the treacherous world we live in. The treacherous world, surely. Never another yarn or tweed will he put upon his loom. Oh, Marty, you were a good companion, a great one to walk the hills, whistling the tunes, pleasant in your conversation and as broad-spoken as the Bible.
Did you know the weaver well, father?
Who better? Who drunk more pint with him than what myself did? And indeed, it's to his wake I'd be setting out. And as under his cuff on my shoulder would be gone if I wasn't confined to my robe.
You ought to make him lie down. He's tired.
No, not tired. He hates anyone to say he's tired.
Ask him about the grave, so.
Father, Mrs. Heher wants to know...
Wait one minute now and I'll tell him more about the weaver.
Oh, we'll wait. Won't we, Mrs. Heher?
Indeed, we will wait.
The weaver was a dream.
Maybe Mrs. Heher wouldn't give in to that.
Whether she gives into it or whether she doesn't give into it, it's a dream, Mortimer Heher was. And his loom and his shuttles and his warping bars and his bobbins and the threads he put upon the shift and wrecks were all a dream. And the only thing he ever wove upon his loom was a dream. And what's more, every woman that ever come into his head and every wife he married was a dream. I'm telling you that, Nan, and I'm telling it to you of the weaver. His wife was a dream, and his death is a dream. And his widow there is a dream, and all the world is a dream. Do you hear me, Nan? This world is all a dream.
I hear you very well, Father.
And I'm a dream.
This is the most terrible old man yet.
I'm a dream. The idiot laughing in the street, the king looking at his crown, the woman turning her head to the sound of a man's step, the bells ringing in the belfry, the man walking his land, the weaver as his loom, the cooper as his battle, the pope stooping for his red slippers. They're all a dream. And I'll tell you why they're a dream. Because this world was meant to be a dream.
Father, you're talking too much. You'll overreach yourself.
Hey, you're saying that because you don't understand me.
I understand you very well.
You only think you do. Listen to me now, Nan. I want you to do something for me. You won't refuse me.
I won't refuse you, Father. You know very well I won't.
Hey, you're a good daughter to me, surely, Nan. And do what I tell you now. Shut close your eyes. Shut them fast and tight. No fluttering of the lids now.
Very well, Father.
And what is it you see now, Nan?
Nothing at all, Father.
And what you do? Keep them closed tight and you'll see it.
I see nothing. Only
what? Why don't you say it?
Only darkness, Father.
And isn't that something to see? Isn't it easier to see darkness than to see light? Nan, look into the darkness.
I'm looking, Father.
And think of something, anything at all. The stool before the kitchen fire outside.
I'm thinking of it.
And do you remember it?
I do well.
And when you remember it, what do you want to do? Sit on it, maybe?
No, Father.
And why wouldn't you want to sit on it?
Because I'd like to see it first to make sure.
Ah, there it is. You want to make sure that it's there, although you remember it well. And that's the way with everything in the world. People close their eyes and they're not sure of anything. They want to see it again before they believe. There's Nan now, and she doesn't believe in the stool before the fire. The stool she's looking at all her life, and that her mother used to set her on before the fire when she was a small child. She closes her eyes and it's gone. And listen to me now, Nan. If you had a man of your own and you closed your eyes, you wouldn't be too sure he was the man you remembered. And you'd want to open your eyes and look at him to make sure he was the man you knew before the lids dropped on his eyes. And if you had children about you and you'd shut your back and closed your eyes and tried to remember them, you'd want to look at them to make sure. You'd be no more sure of them than you know the stool in the kitchen. One flash of the eyelids and everything in the world is gone.
I'm telling you, Father, you're talking too much.
I'm not talking half enough. And we all are lazy about the world. The things in the world that we can only believe in them while we're looking at them. From one season of our life to another, haven't we a kind of belief that sometime we'll wake up and find everything different? Didn't you ever feel that, Nan? Didn't you think things would change? That the world would be a new place altogether, and that all that was going on around us was only a business that was doing us out of something else. We put up with it while the little cankering is nibbling at the butt of our hats for something else. All the men there be who believe that someday the thing will happen. That they'll turn around the corner and waken up in the great street.
And sure, maybe they're right. And maybe they will waken up.
Oh, Nan, do you believe you'll swing round the corner and waken up?
Well, I do.
Oh, Nan Rowan believes she'll waken up. Waken up from what? From a sleep and from a dream. From this world? And if you believe that, Nan Rowan, it shows you know what's what. There's only dreamers who can hope to waken up. Do you hear me, Nan?
I hear you.
The world is only a dream, and a dream is nothing. We all want to waken up out of the great nothingness of this world.
And please God we will.
And you can tell the world from me that it won't.
And why won't we, Father?
Because we ourselves are the dream. And when we're over, the dream is over with us. That's why.
Father, You know a great deal.
Then enough.
And maybe you could tell me something about the weaver's grave. Mrs. Heher here wants to know.
And then when they have to tell you all about the weaver's grave. When they have to tell you it's all a dream.
Why, you never said that, Father. Indeed, you never did.
I said everything in this world is a dream. And the weaver's grave is in this world, below in Clunamarav.
Where in Clunamarav? What part of it, Father? That's what Mrs. Heher wants to know. Can you tell her?
I can tell her. He was at his father's burial. He remembers above all burials because that was the day the handsome girl under the castle fell over a grave and fainted. The sweat broke out on young Donoghue when he saw under the castle tumbling over the grave. Nothing matter would he marry her after that, and he sworn to it by the kiss of her lips. I'll marry no woman that fell in the grave, says Donoghue. She'd maybe have a child by me with turning eyes and a twisted limb. So I married a farmer's daughter. And the same man and honour Castler married the cattle drover. Very well then. Donoghue's wife had no child at all. She was a barren woman. Hear me now. A barren woman she was. And such children as honour Castler had by the drover. Yellow hairs they had, heavy as seaweed, and the skin of them clear as the wind, and limbs plain as a whistle. Oh, it was said that the drover was of the blood of the Danes, and it broke out in another Castlow's family.
Maybe they were Vikings.
Oh, what's you saying? And when they tell you it's Danes they were. Oh, did anyone ever hear a greater miracle?
No, we never did.
And I'll tell you what saved another Castlow. When she fell in Clunamarav, she turned her cloak inside out.
But what about the weaver's grave, Father? Mrs. Heher wants to know.
Mrs. Heher wants to know. So that's the end of the story. Sally McCabe, the blacksmith's favourite, wants to know where she'll sink the weaver house inside. Great battles were fought in Lusgan over Sally McCabe. The weaver thought his heart would burst, and the blacksmith damned his soul for the sake of Sally McCabe's idle hours.
Father, let the dead rest.
Let the foolish dead rest. The dream of Lusgan is over. And now the pale woman is looking for the black weaver's grave. Well, good luck to her.
Oh, do you know where the grave is?
Do I know where the grave is? Do I know where my rope is?
Where is it, then?
I'll tell you that. It's under the elm tree of Clunamarav. That's where it is, surely. There was never a weaver yet didn't find rest under the elm tree of Clunamarav. There they all went as surely as the buds came from the branches. And Sally McKay put poor Marchie there. Let she give him a tear or two in memory of the days that his heart was ready to burst for her. And believe you me, no ghost will ever haunt her. No dead man yet ever came back to look upon a woman.
Oh, dear, he thinks I'm the long-dead Sally McCabe lamenting the weaver. Still, 'tis a good job the mystery of the grave has been cleared up at last. But the young gravedigger said to get the exact position. What position under the elm tree?
Position of what?
Of the grave.
Of what grave?
The weaver's grave.
Oh, what are you talking to me of graves, Mar? Why will you be tormenting me like this? It's not going to die, I am, is it? Is it going to die, I am not?
Indeed, there's grave fear, ya. Lie down now and rest yourself. Fatigued out and out,
George. Don't touch me! And when I tell you not to touch me, have I any business talking to you at all? Is it gone where your daddy is in this house?
He glared at his daughter, his eyes red with anger, like a dog crouching in his kennel. Then he lowered himself inch by inch, ell by ell on the rope, descending into helplessness, as a vessel is lowered into a dark, deep well. I left the home of Malachy Roan with the feeling that I had discovered the grave of one old man by almost killing another. The day was going on me while the weaver lay above in my little house, the candles lighting about him, the brown habit over him, a crucifix in his hands, everything as it should be. Cantankerous he may have been at times, but I had done my duty to the last. Done my duty in going to see Malachy Roan, a sight I could never forget, and taking the business of the grave out of the hands of Micheál Linsky and Cathair Bowes. There they were in the distance, like two black cockroaches perched on a tombstone in Clún na Maraigh. Above them a slash of red in the western sky and a bright single star, flashing so freshly that it might never have shone before, dancing with all the joy of youth. Why should a star be always young, a man aged so soon? The old men have their backs turned on each other, very likely after another argument. In the pale grass, the two gravediggers are lying on their backs, staring silently up at the heavens. Handsome young men, lick alike like peas in a pod, one as good-looking as the other. It's all very like the dream Malachy Roan has spoken about.
The supreme twin turned his head, and his soft, velvety brown eyes met the eyes of the widow. There was welcome in those eyes.
The widow read that welcome as plainly as if he had spoken his thoughts.
He sprung to his feet, smiling.
The eyes were not the same as the eyes of the other twin. No such velvety soft lights were in the eyes of the second one. He was more sheepish. The resemblance between them was only skin deep. I wonder now why I never noticed all this before.
Collecting her thoughts, piloting her skirts modestly about her legs as she got down from the narrow stonework of the stile, she stumbles into the contrariness of Clún na Maraigh.
Well, did you see Malachy Roan?
I did.
Had he any word for us?
He had. He remembers the place of the weaver's grave.
What does he say?
He says it's under the elm tree.
There was silence. The stonebreaker swung about on his legs. His sharp eyes were turned upward as if he were searching the heavens for an elm tree. Then he dropped his jaw and stared bleakly across the ground, blankly, patiently, like a fisherman on the shore gazing over an empty sea.
A miserable feeling swept the widow, that she stood on the verge of some collapse.
Under the elm tree.
That's what he said, under the elm tree of Clún na Maraigh.
Well, when you find the elm tree, you'll find a grave.
Not knowing what an elm tree was, she saw all this as an unnecessary complication. Giving names and peculiarities to a tree was something she didn't like. And at this moment, when the elm tree of Malachy Roan had raised a fresh problem in Clún na Maraigh, a sense of oppression in her sorely tried brain made her aware
of the likeness of old men to old trees. Their crankiness, their angles, their very barks and bulges and twistiness.
Under the elm tree. The elm tree of Clún na Maraigh. Oh, if I was any good at all at making a rhyme, I'd make one about that elm tree. Divil other, but I would.
There were numerous trees in Clún na Maraigh, and it would be easy for Malachy Roan to have mistaken some other sort of tree for an elm. There must be plenty of other trees very like an elm. Thousands of people like myself must go through life in the belief that a certain type of tree is an elm, when it might be a chestnut, or a beech, a poplar, a birch, or a yew. But Malachy Roan wouldn't agree to that. He let go his rope in the belief that there's an elm tree in Clún na Maraigh. But I'll say nothing. Say no more. Because a discussion about trees would be the sort of a dispute in which Micheál, Linsky and Cathair Bowes would revel. They'd struggle from tree to tree in Clún na Maraigh until the place was strewn with the corpses of their arguments. And the net result would be that I'd be no wiser about the elm trees or the weaver's grave. 'Tis no use. Not even old men can transform a hedge into an elm tree. The elm tree of Malachy Rohan does not exist. Nobody would ever know now whether it ever existed or not. And I'd sooner give the weaver to the howling winds of the world than go back and interview the cooper again on the subject.
Old Malachy Rohan is doting.
The nearest elm tree I know is half a mile away.
Going above a carrier?
Aye, beside the mill. It all goes to prove that the grave of the weaver is where I told you first, right here between these two mounds.
Aren't you afraid that God would strike you where you stand?
I'm not a bit afraid. It's the weaver's grave, sure as I'm here.
You say that after all we saw and after what all heard.
I do. I saw the weaver's father, Lord, in that place. And I'll tell you what's more. It was Father Owen McCarthy that read over him. He, a young red-haired curate in this place at the time, long before he became parish priest of Benelog. There was I, standing in this exact spot. A young man, too, with a light moustache, holding me hat in me hand. And there, one side of me, maybe 5 yards from that, the marble stone of the Kiernahans, was Patsy Corkin, that drank himself to death after. And on the other side of me was Honor Costello, that fell in the grave and married the cattle drover, a big, loose-shouldered Dane.
Malachy Rohan story all over again. These old men remember everything. Provided it happened 50 years ago. Maybe there's something in what Micheál Linsky says. But what's the use? We seen a while ago 'tis full of stout coffins.
If this be the grave of the weaver, what's Julia Rafferty doing in it? Answer me that, Micheál Linsky.
I don't know what she's doing in it, and what's more, I don't care. And believe you my word, many a queer thing happened in Clún na Maraigh that had no right to happen in it. Julia Rafferty, maybe, isn't the only one that is where she had no right to be.
Maybe she isn't. But it's there she is anyhow, and I'm thinking it's there she's likely to stay.
If she's in the weaver's grave, what I say is, out with her.
Very well then, Micheál Linsky. Let you be the powerful man to deal with Julia Rafferty. But remember this, and remember it's my word. That touch one bone in this place and you touch all.
No fear at all have I to right or wrong. I'm no backslider when it comes to justice, and justice I'll see done among the living and the dead.
Go ahead then, me hearty fella. If Julia herself is in the wrong place, somebody else must be in her own place. And you'll be following one right ment with another wrong ment, until in the end you'll go mad with the tangle of dead men's wrongs. That's the end that's in store for you, me harlots.
That I may be as dead as my father if I don't soon shift you out of this.
You try shifting
come
me,
come on down on the level ground and I'll fight you. I'll be dug up, I'll straighten you.
As another row developed, the widow felt miserable, her feet stone cold from the chilly dampness of the ground. The twin, who did not now count, took out his pipe. The twin who did count turned his head to the widow.
They're a nice pair of boyos, them two lads.
Do you think will they ever find us?
It's hard to say. You'd never know what to think. Two old lads, the like of them, do be very tricky.
God grant they'll get it.
God grant.
But they didn't get it. They only got exhausted as before, wheezing and coughing and glaring at each other as they sat down on two mounds. The widow was only aware
of the nice warmth of the gravedigger's brown eyes.
Are you awakened, the weaver, again tonight?
I am.
Well, maybe some person, some old man or woman from the country, may turn up and be able to tell you where the grave is. You could make inquiries.
Yes. I suppose I could make inquiries.
We could all maybe make inquiries.
I'm beholden to you. Ah, everyone's very good to me.
The two old men agreed to call off the search, for the simple reason
that tomorrow is another day, and I'll have another chance to show that old fella Linsky what stuff the Boses are made of.
Tomorrow is another day, surely, that will show the Boses what the Linskys were like.
I wonder if Cahir Bose will ever be able for the hill home. I'll give him a glass of whiskey if he can make it that far. The two of them looked fagged out from making liars of one another all day. And if anything keeps them alive, tis looking forward to making liars of one another all day tomorrow also.
Cahir Bose stopped dead on the road. Something had happened in his brain, some old memory long dormant had stirred. A searchlight had suddenly flooded the dark corners of memory. The widow saw him
pivot on his heels and run like mad down the road back to the graveyard with the mad wild springs of a kangaroo, buck jumping in the air.
God between us and all, harem. Old Cahir Bose has gone off his head at last. I thought there was something up with him all day. It was as he known there was something ugly working in his mind.
God forgive me for laughing, and the weaver with the habit fresh upon him.
As God is my judge, this place and no other is the weaver's grave.
He was crying, dribbling from the mouth, showing his yellow teeth, pouring sweat on his forehead, quivering on his last legs.
We'd better dig or we'll be the death of him.
The earth sang up out of the ground, dark and rich in color, gleaming like gold in the deepening twilight. 2 feet, 3 feet, 4 feet of earth came up, until at last 5 feet of a pit yawned in the ancient ground.
You hit the weaver's grave this time right enough. Not another grave in the place could be as free as this one.
I got the weaver's grave, surely. Where is Micheál Linsky now? What will the people be saying at all about his attack on Julia Rafferty's grave? Julia will haunt him, and I'd sooner have anyone at all haunting me than the ghost of Julia Rafferty. Where is Micheál Linsky now? Is it a shame to show his liary face he is? And what talk had Malachy Ruhan about an elm tree? Elm tree indeed. If its trees is troubling him, let him climb up on one of them and hang himself from it with his rope. Where is the old fellow Micheál Linsky and his rotten head? Where is he, I say? Let him come in here now to Clonamara until I be showing him the weaver's grave. 5 feet down and not a rib or a knuckle in it. As clean and beautiful as the weaver ever wished it. Come in here, Micheál Linsky, until I hear lies panting again in your yellow throat.
Whist, will you? Don't mind that old madman. He hasn't it at all. Let him dig away. They'll hit something in a minute. The Raffertys will level him when they find out. His brain has turned. Whist now, will you? And I'll have that rambling old lunatic Cahir Bose in a minute. I'll leap in on him. I'll charge him before the world. I'll show him up. I'll take the gab out of him. I'll lacerate him. I'll lambaste him. God in heaven. He has it. He has the weaver's grave.
We're over 5 feet down. Isn't that enough to sink the weaver in? Widow, are you satisfied?
Before she could reply, he was on the rampage again.
Where's that nailer? Never you fear I'll show him up at the weaver's wake tonight. Where's that nailer?
He went in search of Linsky, and the second twin, who didn't count, followed to hear him handling the nailer. The widow was left alone with the other twin, who drew himself up out of the grave with a sinuous movement of the body. He stood without a word, beside a pile of heaving clay like a miniature bronze mountain, and looked at the widow. She looked
at him, and beyond him, at the dark green wall, and above it at the sky of deepening red, and above that again at the one fresh star in the sky. The world was strange. The red sky extraordinary. The man's head against the sky a wonder, a poem about the sparkle of the great young star. Beyond this, the stillness, the stillness of heaven and earth. Never was this world so strange, so like the dream that Malachy Rowan had talked about.
A movement in the figure of the man beside the heap of bronze came to her as a warning, a fear, and a delight. The next instant she saw the figure of the man spring across the open black mouth of the weaver's grave to her. A faint sound escaped her. And then his breath was hot on her face, his mouth on her lips.
Then he looked into the grave and said,
5 feet. Are you satisfied?
I'm satisfied.
Her voice was low, but fresh, like the voice of a young girl.